Den of thieves, rummaging for answers in the pages. Live in a den of thieves, and it's contagious, and it's contagious, and it's contagious, and it's contagious.
Everyone, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Brothers Movie Factory. I'm your host, Ben. With me, as always, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory.
Tom's broken heart and plates.
Tom's broken heart and plates.
That'd be a good band name. Tom's broken plates.
Maybe not plates. Broken heart would be good. Like Tom's broken heart. That's a good name.
Yeah,
good punk, why not? Punk band name.
Write that down.
Indeed, joining me as always, Gus, the brother of the Brothers Movie Factory, and we're keeping strong even though Valentine's Day has come and gone. We're continuing on with our month of love, our Valentine's month of fun, and that. Last week we watched Princess Bride. This week watched my favorite romance movie. I'm not sure if it's your favorite or not.
I see. This is lately we've been getting into a struggle with genres. See, I put this in the category.
If you call this romantic comedy, I'm going to say that's a fucking romance movie.
It's a rom com,
which is a romance movie.
That's a, you know.
That's like, hey, I don't mean to burst your bubble, but this fiction movie, it's a science fiction movie. That's
yes,
the same
yes.
thing.
No, it's not, because you got like, what if it's like fantasy fiction, sci-fi? It's like two different things. But no, I get what you're saying. This I classify this as rom-com.
So if it's a romantic comedy, is it still a romance movie?
Is it still a comedy movie?
Yeah. Could you theoretically say that this is a comedy? Could you, if you're just stapling it down to one singular genre, could you say, yeah, it's a comedy?
Maybe both.
See? Or then you get a rom-com, but it's also a romance movie, damn it.
Yeah, this is more romance, for sure. You know, I got people arguing against me about when we were talking Predator. They're like, I definitely say it's a horror over a sci-fi. I'm like, well, you know what?
Like, well,
get
you
your
know,
own podcast.
You're wrong. Yeah. But that's that. But yeah, no, we watched one of our favorite romantic comedies, comedies out there, 500 Days of Summer. It was on our list. We watched Princess Bride last week, 500 Days of Summer this week, and then next week we got the big one, the Titanic in the wings over there.
Titanic in the wings.
In the wings. I don't know what that means. But it sounded cool as I said it.
That's another punk band name.
Titanic in the wings.
They do Paul McCartney in the wings. Like covers, but yeah. Like bagpipes and such.
Anyways, yes, indeed. So what we are doing here, if you are not familiar with the show, is every week on the pod, we watch a film. We then take that film to the podcast and discuss it, what we liked, what we didn't, what worked, what didn't. We then submit that movie to the factory. That's where we take the film we just watched, and we imagine what it would look like if it came out today. Who would direct it? Who would compose it? Who would star? Same story, same movie, just modern booking. Modern era. And then we have a little bit of a questiony time at the end. So, like I said, this whole month, our plan was to do some romantic movies. And we started the month off with a romance discussion, Valentine's Day discussion. We found our way to Princess Bride last week. And 500 Days of Summer, as I said there at the beginning, is my favorite romance movie, romantic comedy, whatever the hell you want to call it. It is my favorite. in general, because of how real it is. Do you concur? Do you believe that this might be one of the most factual, like, relationship type things put to screen ever?
It's a toss up between that and a Twilight New Moon.
Of course.
Between
this and Titanic. Wait.
I would say yes, but only based on what my eyes have seen and what your eyes have seen. I would agree. This movie, I'll get into it a little later, but this movie hurts to watch. It's very real. It's portrayed very real, especially for anyone who's gone through something similar. The film's more of a mirror than when it comes to those kind of things, because it's very familiar. You just said, yeah, it's one of the most realistic portrayals of, I'll say, an overall relationship, from the meeting, from things starting out to falling in love to sometimes, yes, when that love kind of falls apart and the eventual breakup and then the aftermath of that. Very real. And it's a compliment to all that were involved. I know this movie came out in 2009. By 2006, this script was on a stack of like the best scripts of movies that haven't been made yet, and it got snagged up as soon as that kind of information got out. And they gave this movie to Mark Webb.
Of Spider-Man, Amazing Spider-Man fame.
Yeah, who had only really directed music videos up until this point. This was his like feature film debut, and what a debut, because it's masterfully done. I watched this with roommate Matt, and we're popping it in. I made a reference, like a joke from the movie. He like kind of looked on, like he's like, like didn't get it. I'm like, yeah, like that face.
Mouth open, eyes agape.
Not even eyes agape. It was more like eyes half agape.
Eyes closed, mouth open.
And he's just like, I've never seen this movie. I'm like, what?
And you told him to get down on his knees, and you held your hand out and said, choke yourself.
I said, get down on your knees and tell me you love me.
Jesus.
Because you're going to after you watch this movie.
He's like, I just want to be friends. That's like a comment to this movie.
It is. Friends my balls, because we love each other. Hey. And he needed to see this kind of movie. You know, oh, yeah. Matt. Like, oh, yeah. He would have benefited from seeing this movie years ago.
Yeah.
Just emotionally. So, yeah, we watched it. It was my first time seeing it in many years. Yes, it is my favorite of a genre. I'll keep what genre it is to myself, apparently, because it's a trigger word. Yeah. But
I'll fight you. It's a horror movie. Man.
It's my favorite romance horror film.
It's terrifying.
Romer.
is there such a thing?
A romantic horror?
Dead bodies. Cold bodies? Warm bodies?
Warm bodies. That would be it.
Would that be a romantic horror?
Maybe. Maybe Zombieland.
Maybe Who Zombieland. Knows? I don't know. Chew your gum.
I was going to say, who gives a shit, but you said the same thing. Chew your gum. Same thing. This movie's special. It's a very special movie. It's unique. I was getting at, I hadn't seen it in many years. And it came time for me to watch it a few years back. It was 2017. I just moved back to Pittsburgh. And I was at a store with some friends. And 500 Days of Summer was there on Blu-ray for like $7.99. I'm like, oh, a steal. So I grabbed it. And I didn't make it out of the store with that. I had to put it down. I'm like, I'm not ready to watch this. So here I am, roughly 4 years later. And watching this movie with a brand new set of eyes. I went through a couple sets of eyes.
Eyes unclouded.
Yeah. A couple sets of eyes before seeing it tonight. Because when I watched it when I was younger, I loved it for what it was. But I had a different view on it. And then I couldn't watch it because of the hurdy stuff. But now that I'm older and wiser and have gathered my heart and my mind, I'm able to kind of watch this movie from a different perspective because I couldn't before. Before I was not ready to watch this movie. Now I am, and I did. And yes, you know what? It still kind of stung to watch. It was like
PTSD.
Yeah, that's the best way to put it. It reminded me of the hurt that I had kind of forgot about. Seeing what Tom and Summer kind of go through. I don't want to say falling out because it wasn't really a falling out. It was just more like a crumbling. And then certain scenes that we'll touch on later, just seeing that was like a knife in my memory heart.
That's what they call it.
But that's more like, once again, a compliment to the movie. It's just so well done. But like I was getting at, finishing the movie, total different perspective than I would have had 4 years ago, than I did probably 5 years ago when I last saw the movie. And yeah, it's one of my favorites.
The thing about this, you had touched on about how, you know, this movie relates to people, and you were like, I said how I think it relates to a lot of people, and you mentioned how, you know, you can't speak for everyone else, but it does relate to you. I have there are parts of it that relate to me. I feel like it, in some degree, way, shape, or form, there is something in this film that will relate to a particular relationship that anyone has had in their life. I almost guarantee at least one aspect, one phase of anything touched upon in this movie. Interesting thing that all ties to, not only is experience, but exactly what you just said, perspective. You know, you watch this film and it makes you hurt in a way. You get bad memories. I cannot tell you the last time that I watched this movie, but I can also not tell you the last time that I watched a movie and I had a smile on my face the entire time, just because I was enjoying the movie, watching this journey and kind of looking at it in a way and thinking like, oh yeah, that happened to me once, and being better from the experience because you know what's coming at the end of this movie.
I know the answer to that. Last time you had that happen, it was Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah, indeed. When I was on the plane.
Smile from ear to ear.
Yeah, I was like,
I remember when this happened to me.
Yeah. But no, yeah, like I found myself grinning throughout pretty much the majority of this movie. And not to say that I sat there and I'm like, oh yeah, I've experienced this, but also being able to sit there and say, like, you know, I was better from, I learned from these experiences. And a lot of this movie, I feel, shaped me. It's a movie that I feel, not unjustly, but I feel like unjustly is a large word. For this, a little too grand of a word, but I feel like it had a part in shaping me in terms of the way I think about things and the way I thought about relationships, especially when I was younger. It's interesting because there is that reference early on to The Graduate and how Tom's view of relationships was skewed, partially due to sad British pop music, and a misunderstanding of the ending of The Graduate, which is also a fantastic movie. But I feel that this movie, in a lot of ways, throughout all the experiences and the ups and downs, shaped me in a way of like what I saw in relationships, what I expected from relationships, and kind of how I dealt with different things. But I think that was partially due to the fact that I just found it so relatable throughout my young life. And being able to relate to different scenarios like the heartache, because, you know, yeah, high school's hell, a lot of times, and in the most simple things can put you in a bad mood, right? Like you could be in a relationship with anyone and them not responding the way, you know, that you take the wrong way or something like that, it can tear your day apart.
Not just your day, your whole life.
Yeah. And when you're young and, you know, and like there's that moment, I laughed at it today watching it, where he's like, it's over. And he's like, it showed the scene where they're in the elevator and he asks Summer how her weekend was. And she goes, it was good. And he goes, can you believe that shit? Like that's relatable. You know, I actually a while back looked at my, for those who pretty much everyone would know this, our art class in high school, our art teacher would have us keep a art book, a sketchbook, and we could turn it in for bonus points. And you were encouraged to pretty much put whatever you want in that sketchbook. You had to show him it and he would give you bonus points. I don't know. Did you keep a sketchbook?
Yeah.
So I recently went back and looked through one of my sketchbooks. It was my 9th grade sketchbook. It was later in the year, later toward the back, but I literally just had this sentence written, and it was, how come one word can ruin an entire day? And it was usually, I just remember seeing that and thinking, like, yeah, I remember that being, like, something that would happen. Like, someone, whatever it may be, would say something and ruin your day, whatever context. And I was like, that is partially, that's how I connected with this in that way. It's like, there was no reason for him to take it that way, but it just, for whatever reason, his expectation and his reality were different.
Right. So at a young age, you find this movie, and it's like, ah, there it is. Like, something I can relate to, something that I can not base, it's more like validate.
Yeah.
But I can validate my experiences from that I'm currently going through. And that's great. That's what makes this movie special for a lot of people, you and I included. I just want to also jump in and not correct something you said, but you mentioned this movie, you know, made you happy throughout your rewatch of it. Grin from ear to ear and all the experiences. And you mentioned that it, you know, reminded me of the hurt and the bad times. I did say that, but that's not what this movie did for me, this viewing. Yes, yeah. I, like I usually do, I focus on things like that. Like, it reminded me of some hard times, but, this movie is a joy. And I agree. I was smiling from the moment it started. Actually, honestly, the 100% truth. It starts, it has like the narration of like boy meets girl, blah blah blah. This isn't a love story. I like 500 Days of Summer Tears. As soon as that Us by Regina Spektor started playing, I don't know, so it was good. Like a nostalgia rush.
Yeah.
I'm like, I love this movie. And just it was also like for the characters, seeing young Tom and young Summer, like as children, like it's like home video style. Just, I don't know, the thought of like these two young children are going to grow up and they're going to meet each other and they're going to fall in love and, you know, it's just not going to work out. And it's like, yeah, those things come to my mind and I'm like, those sting.
Yeah.
But,
cause it's true. I mean, you have, you watch them grow up in the beginning and see their different upbringings. And yeah, that thought creeps in of these two are going to one day meet and have a relationship and ultimately in a way change each other's lives.
Oh, absolutely. Change each other's lives. These two characters, they alter the way they perceive love,
yeah,
in general. But yeah, as you said, I guess the aftermath or no, it was more like you are where you're at today because of those.
Yeah.
Those bad times or the growing times, as I like to call them. But continue. You were talking about your sketchbook and a word can
yeah,
just
well,
ruin
no,
your
that's,
day.
Yeah.
This movie, it was, allowed you to validate those feelings.
Yeah. And just be relate to those sorts of things. And even like a lot of, I think about this movie in a positive manner, mostly because, which damn it, tried to get him on the show, but wouldn't come on. My friend, nickname for him, Pork, he and I almost completely formulated a friendship on this movie. We watched this movie a lot in high school for whatever reason, whether it was just throwing it on in the background or just kind of enjoying the characters. A lot of it we thought was funny. And maybe it was because both of us, and I believe that you would factor yourself into this category of person as well, hopeless romantics at a young age. Just kind of looking for, like, those, like you said, what was the word? Relatable, something we relate to, validates thoughts and things like that. I mean, this movie does a lot of that throughout, where it's like, yeah, that's true. That is how people act. Like when Summer is first introduced and Tom's friend walks up and he's like, I hear she's a bitch. And he has no reason to know that. He said, oh, he was coming on to her and she put him off. He's like, maybe she was busy or maybe she's an uppity bitch. And he's like, oh, it sucks. Like, that happens. I've seen that happen. It's like, it's very, it's just so real. And, I mean, the movie itself, and we'll talk about it throughout, but it does show, as you said, the growing times, and it shows it in a span of 500 days. And that's like, it's overall message of this growing and changing and learning. That's why I enjoy this movie, is because, like I said, this movie affected me in a way. I mean, this was my, we've talked about it before, about how we would have dinner and a movie nights in high school. This was my first movie that I got to choose and host a dinner and a movie for. That holds a special significance to me, because this is one of the first movies that I went into and I dissected and tried to figure out, you know, what do certain things mean? Because there is a lot of symbolism throughout, and there is a lot of meaning behind words and feelings, and there's a lot of heart in the movie. It's just a very special movie. I'm glad I watched it again. I was very happy watching it all day. It's just, there's so many aspects to it. Even, you know, the first, when I started dating my now wife, the first CD, like, you know, people do mixtapes, the first CD before phones were a thing I ever burned her was the 500 Days of Summer soundtrack. And she would pick me up for school, and that would be playing, because we started dating in high school. But, like, things like that. So it's a special movie on multiple levels. I really still enjoy every bit of this movie.
Let's talk about that soundtrack. You mentioned it. Definitely one of my favorite movie soundtracks. If it probably is my favorite, honestly. I was like thinking of
Guardians movie. Is very hard to beat for me.
Guardians, yes, that would be the other one. Guardians 1 and 2.
Yep.
But I don't know, this, I just love every song on the soundtrack, and it came in handy, because when I saw this, I was in college, like just starting college, and, you know, having the soundtrack to 500 Days of Summer on your iTunes makes you feel more sophisticated, like more like you have better taste in music, because when your iTunes is just covered in Weird Al Yankovic and pro wrestling theme songs. I mean, that,
and it still that is only
that only translates to a certain crew. But hey, if you're trying to get out there and you start playing some Smiths,
now it's 500 Days of Summer, Weird Al Yankovic, wrestling themes, and anime themes.
Yeah, that's pretty much all I listen to. That's no joke. Great score. Some of my favorites are.
Would you say because of the time frame that you watch this, that, because I want to dive in on that real quick before you continue explaining this. You said you're trying to think if there is any other soundtracks that you think might be your favorite in terms of like a soundtrack of what's the actual like word for when all it's just a bunch of songs pulled. Is it just a soundtrack and not like an orchestrated whatever? Like, is it because of the time period? because, like, for me, Guardians of the Galaxy is my favorite soundtrack of a movie in history, but the reason that is because that soundtrack released on Spotify the month I was moving into college. So from it was basically my, like, August playlist that led me through my first couple months of college.
Right.
So, like, that was a big moment in my life, and that soundtrack will be with me for that, you know. Mm-hmm. So is that why? Because you mentioned how 500 Days was early college.
Yeah. It I mean, not nearly as deep as that for you as it is for me, but it was kind of like my eye opener. Like, oh, there is, like, good music out there that I'm not listening to yet. Different music that I'm not listening to. It was kind of the gateway to a lot of different music that I listen to now. So I can always link it back to that. Like, oh, I listened to, you know, Temper Trap because I heard it on the soundtrack to 500 Days of Summer. I like Wolf Mother because of 500 Days of Summer and The Hangover.
And Guitar Hero.
Yeah. I like Regina Spektor. For two tracks she does in this movie. The second one she does, what's that track called? Hero? I have it handy. Hold on, Bill. Don't you say a fucking
Hero?
Yeah, it's Hero. Yeah. I thought
Hurrah!
Is it called Hurrah? that track plays, and I'm pretty sure that's the part, spoilers, when Tom goes to the party and it's like expectation, reality.
Yeah.
And side by side showing what is going to happen when he finally goes to this party, sees Summer. They've been broken up for several months, and he goes to this party expecting to be like kind of the start again, the reboot to their relationship. And in reality, he's just kind of by himself, just kind of looking on, being shy and whatnot. And then there's that moment where he sees Summer showing off a wedding ring, engagement ring rather. And just the crescendo of that song and Tom's reaction, it boo-booed my heart. Cause I like something similar happened to me, and I was just like, not exactly like that, but the feeling was very similar, and they recreated it in this movie.
Yeah.
And the song aids that very, very greatly, to the point where I hear the song, it makes me sad. Just like in Toy Story 2, when somebody loves you, everything is beautiful. Those aren't the words, but
I think it's when somebody loved me.
Yeah.
Not you.
I was looking at you.
You and that.
Yeah.
My name's Bill. I'm the Woody's cousin from Pittsburgh.
Jeez.
Not very Western.
Western
Bill the Cowboy.
PA. Western PA.
Yeah.
But yeah, the soundtrack was a gateway soundtrack for a lot of music. And as I've just grown on, just hearing this soundtracks is great. Great music all around. I love it.
Something to build on that too. You mentioned how the song, I mean, there, you can look through, it's similar to Guardians where everything has a purpose. Every song is to make you feel a certain way. The same goes for this. And you know, even when they're dancing at the wedding, you know, this is a hard one for us to just go through and explain the story, 'cause it does jump around. And really, this is a movie that I encourage everyone to watch. So we're probably just going to be jumping around in terms of our story moments and stuff like that. But when they're dancing at the wedding, after being broken up for several months and really not speaking because he realized that she just wants to be friends and she it was serious. As they're dancing, it's At Last, the song At Last is playing. You know, that's all he wanted. He wanted to be back in her arms at last. Even at the end. This is a deep cut that I'm sure you actually don't know of or aren't as, you know, familiar with this, but this is something I kind of pieced together back when I did the Dinner and a Movie Night, is at the very end when his sister, Tom's sister, tells him to look back and not look at just the good things, look at everything, You'll find bad things in there. And the song that plays is a Simon and Garfunkel song called Bookends. So, you know, you're putting an end on the story. The story's coming to an end. It's you're putting a bookend. You had the start of the story, and then you're putting the end on the other end of the story.
Right.
But also, Simon and Garfunkel did the entire soundtrack for the movie The Graduate. So this ending to the story closes with, it's kind of like a bookend to his story and a bookend to him realizing that, you know, his understanding that was partially linked to The Graduate is being kind of signed off with this song by the band that did all the music for The Graduate.
Right.
You know, so bookends isn't in The Graduate. It came out after The Graduate. So, it's just you can find that in pretty much everything. When they're driving around the city and Sweet Disposition is playing, There Goes the Fear, Vagabond, when he's kind of living like a vagabond, looking real beat up and disheveled, but then kind of getting his mojo back and seeing that he needs to do something, and he can see Summer now. Can she see him, or can he, you know, he's seeing clearly, and there's a lot of good stuff in the soundtrack.
That's good. That's good. That's real good.
See, I wish I had my notebook, because I wrote all of this down, I think, in my sketchbook from high school when I did the movie night. Because I remember I went through and wrote notes on this whole movie.
That's good. The bookend stuff's good. Because, like, throughout the movie, it goes to that memory a lot of them at that record store.
Yes.
And he always saw it as she's upset, but he didn't really understand why. And it kind of is portrayed like there's no rhyme or reason. She's just kind of flicked a switch and just changed her mind. But by the end, by the bookend, you get the full memory. And that's when he took her to see The Graduate, and she was very upset. And then they went to the record store, and just things kind of spiraled from there. That was actually the day that she decided or realized, rather.
Pancakes.
Yeah, that's the day she decided that, you know, it wasn't going to work out. And, you know, I'll say this now, now that we're kind of speaking on that, and then you can talk more about the symbolism. What was I going to say?
I don't know.
When I was younger, and this is, pre-2017, and I saw this movie, I just always thought Summer was a bitch. How dare she do that to Tom?
Mm-hmm.
How that poor man. Like, what's wrong with her? And I needed to go through what I did in 2017 and beyond up until here we sit, because now I rewatched it, and it was like I said, I went through several sets of eyes. This set of eyes saw it for what it really is, and I'm like, Summer's not a bitch. There's nothing wrong with her. The only thing she ever did was be a human being.
Yeah.
And human beings have feelings that can change, that can alter, that are ever growing. And it's not even a blame thing. It's just something that happens. Something that I experienced. I was Tom, and such was Summer. And it's not like she's cold or anything like that. Like, I don't blame girl for what happened. It's just life happens. And you know what? Just like Summer, the next person she was with got married to him. Same thing kind of happened to me. And she explains to Tom on the bench at the end that, you know, you change the way I think of things. I think it was fate that I met this guy, because I was in a coffee shop reading a book, and he came over and asked me what I was reading. What if I went to the movies that day? What if I came 10 minutes late or 10 minutes earlier? You know, I would have never met that person who has, like, kind of changed my life, or, you know, has altered the way I am. And it just goes to show. Oh, and then shortly after, Tom is hurt by those things, because she also says, like, I just found something in this person that I was never sure of with you. later that day, he meets Autumn.
Yeah, which is phenomenal.
We'll get to that. He meets Autumn. So, as you said, you have to go through all these things to come out the other end. Because on the other end, Tom is a better person. He knows truly what his perception of love is, where his standing is with those emotions. He probably understands himself a hell of a lot better. Obviously, he does, because he quits his job that he hates, and he pursues something he loves that he pursued once before that just escaped his life. And yeah, he's just better on the other end. And then he meets Autumn, which to us is the audience is the symbolism of, you know, I guess as the audience is like, that's his one. Autumn's going to be the girl of his dreams kind of deal.
Until he meets Winter.
Until he meets Boxing Day.
Yeah.
but, you know, what's crazy, I thought about it and did a little bit of math. I just relate to this movie on such a personal level. It's very strange. Like, I literally had like 500 days of Bert. and I had like very similar experiences. Not exactly, obviously, but it just related a lot throughout the movie. Just the different things that these two went through, the great stuff, the fun stuff, the laughs, the experiences, to the sad stuff, the wondering, like, what is going on? What am I doing wrong? Kind of things, when really it's nothing like that. And then the aftermath, the growing, the having to go through the tough stuff to come better on the other side, to find, you know, find your Autumn. I found my, I don't know, what do you want to call it? Mark, no.
Yeah.
That'll be your podcast name. Yeah, and
that's her name for me, so.
There you go. So, yeah, it's just a very, like I said, having these new set of eyes, watching it, and just really realizing, like, that other person, I mean, I've known for years now, like, that person didn't do anything wrong. They just were living their life, and it just, stuff happens. Whether things that, how it occurred was good or bad, that's neither here nor there. At the core of it, just things kind of happen.
Yeah, which is fun. And that, to go build on that, what you said there, growing up, you watch this and you say, all right, Summer is a bad person. And, you know, that's something that I thought about throughout this movie, watching it today, is we mentioned how this movie is relatable to people. And another thing that's interesting about this movie is that the way you view it will be completely based on your perspective and your experience. Not only, you know, if you were burned like this, like Tom was, you might view it and say, oh, Summer is the bad guy in this movie. Mm. If you were ever a Summer who just wanted to be friends, but this person wanted something more, right, then you'll view Tom as the bad guy. They both hurt each other and multiple times throughout the movie, whether it's for laughs. I mean, right away, all we do is argue. That is bullshit. Like, that's phenomenal. But Tom is being the bad guy in that moment. To a degree, there's give and take, there's push and pull in relationships. And you see that throughout. And you just see the ups and downs throughout. And it's all perspective-based. Something that's interesting on that, and this might be, you told me to continue on this, with symbolism, so I'll tie a little symbolism into the way the movie might make you feel, for those of you who might not know. And this isn't stuff that I have actually ever looked up. I'm being 100% serious, so I could be completely wrong. It's more theory or things that I've just noticed upon watching it, especially in high school. I watched this movie a lot, and I did, like I said, hold a dinner movie night on it, where, you know, the art class and myself watched the movie and then just talk about it and talk about symbolism and things like that. So these are all things that I've picked apart through the years. But if you note, and this is all perspective based, but if you note, anytime it's a day transition, so telling you, you know, what day it's going to be, the tree will have leaves on it and will be very green and it's a little brighter when it's a good day. When it's a bad day, the tree will have less leaves or no leaves at all. It'll be gray. It'll be a darker color. Summer will be wearing a darker blue or a gray. And then in the scenes where it's really, when it's a good day, she'll be wearing a brighter blue, especially in that scene after they have sex for the first time. And it's a phenomenal scene with Hall & Oates playing, You're Making My Dreams Come True. It's a dance number. Mark Webb, again, like Gus said earlier, music video director. Everyone in that scene, not a single person in that scene is not wearing blue. They are all wearing blue.
I was wondering that while watching it, and I didn't take it anywhere beyond a wonder. I was like, I wonder why they're all wearing blue.
Yeah, it's just, it's a common trend. Summer is always in blue throughout this movie. Lighter blues, good days, darker blues, bad days.
She wears blue because it complements her eyes. Yes. I knew that.
Well, even in her apartment, her wallpaper is different shades of blue. She's got a lot of blue. She has those origami swans. And they're all blue, but then Tom touches one, and it's the red one. Not saying that any of this matters. Maybe he just saw Blade Runner. I don't know. But I know it's not an origami swan. But blue is a big color in this. Whether that's to show kind of like melancholy or, you know, softness, blue is a soft color, whatever it may be, you know, a lot of people like blue, so it's just a calming color to them. Summer is a calming figure throughout the movie. But that is something, it's maybe more of a subconscious thing where, you know, you see the dark colors at the beginning of that transition, and you kind of already prep yourself mentally without actually knowing that it's a bad day. I mean, me watching it now, I'm like, all right, it's a bad day. Okay, it's a good day. Just by the transitions, I know what's about to happen. And then you can view that in the colors as well. If she's wearing blue, what type of blue? Is it a lighter blue, a darker blue? Even in that dance scene, it's a bluebird that flies to his finger. So there's a lot of stuff in the transitions, in the color of blue, and it helps to that perspective of how you view things. Because at the end of the day, we get this movie pretty much 100% from Tom's perspective. And that's an interesting take, because you could say, you know, let's watch this through Summer's perspective. And you kind of get that in the scene where Tom is on the blind date. And the girl says, she told you she wanted to be friends. She never cheated on you and she never hurt you in any way. Therefore, she didn't do anything wrong. But to Tom, still, she did something wrong, because it's all perspective-based for him, and it's perspective-based for the audience as well. The transitions, the blues, that all is really, really big and always stuck out to me. Indeed.
You know, taking a different swerve turn, you're talking very artistically, sophisticatedly. I'm going to go the opposite direction. We're talking about that scene. Tom and Summer have sex for the first time. Bam, 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 bam. I almost started doing the DuckTales theme.
Yes. DuckTales. Woo. Is that like, you have you come out?
The danger, what's behind you? That'd be great.
That should be a thing. We should take this scene and do different soundtracks over and see if it matches up. Like he comes out and says, "Are you ready, kids?"
He looks in the car door and fixes his hair, and it's Scrooge McDuck just winking at him. But yes, they have sex for the first time. Hall & Oates kicks in. You Make My Dream Come True. He's walking, has a happy dance. Life's glorious. They just made love. About 2 years ago, I sent Ben a GIF of that scene. Just a quick little. I think it was
the wink.
It was the wink. Tom fixes hair and Harrison Ford winking back at him.
How much do you think that cost them for that, too?
Half the budget.
Their whole budget to have Harrison Ford's likeness in that.
Text that gift to Ben. It had to have been 1 in the morning. And I think you and your wife were laying in bed, and you just, like, said out loud, you're like, huh, I think Gus just had sex.
That's what it meant.
That's what it means. You get that. You get a gift of that. Means someone had sex.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I mean, there's just it's funny because this isn't something that we normally have done on the podcast. That, to my knowledge, where we've actually to this movie. To a lot of people, no one would really look at it the way that I do, and not saying that people aren't artistic or whatever. It's just like I've always liked to pick it apart for some reason. And we don't normally dive into the artsy-fartsy sides of things too much, or at least I don't. You occasionally – I mean, you every episode bring up your factoids and things like that. That's usually – so this is different for me from my perspective to really delve deep on some of these things compared to other episodes or past episodes. But even like – The Graduate. Like, have you seen The Graduate yet?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, I've watched it twice. I watched it in high school, and I've watched it recently with the wife. She fell asleep, because it is kind of a boring movie. But the thing about it, I watched it in high school at kind of a crossroads in my life. I was 10th grade, and I was kind of figuring out where I was going. I just had surgery on my knee and different things like that. It was a tough time. And I watched that movie while I was recovering from my surgery. And I remember thinking at the end, as I watched it, I'm like, oh, it's great. Like, he got the girl. But if you do watch that scene, that's the importance of that scene is, you know, she was like this wealthy girl. Yeah, his mom, her mom had been basically seducing the son, or not the son, the main, Dustin Hoffman. And he falls in love with her. He's told to take her out on a good time. Her mother says, you know, don't you date her or whatever. They fall in love. But then she basically realizes that this graduate, this boy, isn't going to go anywhere with his life. He's going nowhere with his life. She loves him, but she knows it's not best for her. So she's going to get married to this rich guy. And he famously, you know, bangs on the glass and, Elaine!
Cassandra!
Yeah, sorry! But banging on the glass, she runs out with him. They smile. They're all happy. They get in a bus. And, you know, she's a runaway bride. And, you know, they're pulling away. And you look at his face, Dustin Hoffman's face, and he's got a grin on his face, and he's happy. And you look at her face, and it goes from a smile to a little more of like a thinking to almost like a sad face. She realizes that like she might have just fucked her life up. It's you can look at it two ways. It's again perspective. You know, she is going with her heart, but is it best for her? Is it going to last? And he is going with his heart. He thinks it's right. And he's happy about it, but is she happy about it? Did he just screw up her life for his own, you know, self-worth? Or not self-worth, but for himself. So again, it just all falls back on perspective, and that's maybe a reason why The Graduate is relatable to a lot of people. But even says in the beginning, he had a misreading of that movie. He saw it as, you know, it was their destiny to be together, and he wasn't going to stop until he had her. He was going to get her back, and he did, but kind of at what cost, you know? No one knows what the future will hold. And you know, she might, based on that instance, not only regret it, but then, you know, we don't know the story from there. It's left open, but she could regret that whole situation. She could look at him in a different way, kind of be angry with him because he might have screwed up her life in a way. You know, there's a lot of ways to look at it. It's all forced perspective. And that's why, again, this movie's so great, because it has a lot more layers than a lot of people think it does.
Yeah, it's as we said in the beginning, it's a special movie, and yeah, I think we have dived into this movie deeper than we have any other, maybe. But before we go to the Lay Factory, we talked a lot about this movie. We did focus on more, I guess, the breakdown of the relationship. Yes, mentioning the good times, bad times. But why is this movie couple of Tom and Summer, why is it something so interesting, other than it being so real, as the characters and their moments together? what are some of your favorites, and why are Tom and Summer like such a good couple? Like you want them to get, you want them to stay together. Why is that for you?
I feel, I mean, as you watch it, it's just, they feel right together right away. She likes the same music as he does, and he likes her. He had that moment of love at first sight for her. So you're rooting for him. That's kind of how the movie starts, is you're rooting for him. Because we don't really know Summer. We know what the intro told us, but you're rooting for Tom. And then as you kind of start to see them together, and Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Zooey Deschanel have a lot of good chemistry together.
They do, certainly.
You not only are rooting for Tom, but as Tom starts to talk with Summer, and Summer starts to talk with Tom, and you see that they share interests and they have this chemistry, you on a subconscious level were already rooting for Tom, and now they're getting closer and you're like, yes, he's gonna get the girl. And then you kind of start to watch that fall apart. It's because you see it start from nothing and become something. You watch it grow, and then you watch it get destroyed. All in the amount of an hour and 40 some minutes. It's a lot. It's a quick, you know, ripping the Band-Aid off. And I think that's why you want it to succeed. That's why you want it to happen, is because you see so much of the good, and then you see the bad. And you know that, you know, we talked about your past a couple times, but I remember when that was all going down, you know, this is something that I always use as an example. In advice to people and things like that, is this movie, you know, you have to go through things to get to the other side, to learn things. And a lot of times, no matter how good the advice is from someone, at the end of the day, you are the only person that can experience it to make the choice for yourself. And that's something that you see in this movie. And so that, I think that's why you kind of want him to succeed, because everyone, again, sees a little bit of themselves in this movie, I'm sure, in some way, shape, or form. But at the same time, we watched it grow from this infancy of a relationship all the way up to a thing, and it's a really good thing. But then you see it come tumbling down, crashing down, as relationships can do. And it's just, it's gut-wrenching. It's heartbreaking to see that, because you can relate to it in some degree. And so I think that's why, because we all maybe subconsciously kind of vicariously place ourselves in one of these characters' positions.
You know, deleted scene, but Tom goes through his experience, Summer goes through her experience. They're both better off in the end. In the very end, they're both better off. Deleted scene, Tom gets into anime.
Oh, really?
No, that's not true. I just feel like everyone should watch anime. It makes your
life better. Someone saved my life tonight. Anime. Anime. That's actually the that should be a Weird Al parody of that song.
But some of my favorite things about the relationship, I'll say more like specifically from the scenes. I like when they're at the bar and they're kind of really like getting to the nitty gritty during karaoke night.
They talk about their differing views on love right then and there.
And the chemistry between Joseph Gordon-Levitt and Zooey Deschanel is great. Honestly, this is an unpopular opinion. I actually don't really care for Zooey Deschanel too much.
Is it because of The Happening?
No, it's more because of the whatever shows she's in.
Hey, I'll get Jonathan Scott here to kick your ass.
I don't even know who that is.
The one of the two brothers from Property Brothers. It's her fiance.
Okay.
he's the contractor one with the longer hair and the highlights. It's her fiance.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And they just built a thing for Brad Pitt, so they can really get Brad Pitt on board. He'll kick your ass.
I'd be like, kill me. I'm an idea. Do it, please.
Zooey Deschanel walks in with an axe and goes, oh, hey, heard you weren't a fan of me.
Yeah, hi, I'm a little quirky. I'll sing you a song while I kill you.
I don't know who that was an impression of.
I guess.
But I think she's amazing in this movie. I love her character. It fits perfectly here for me. And there's that line. Where are they? Are they laying in bed together? And she's like, you're fun. You're fun. I like you.
Yeah.
It's the way she says it. I'm just like, oh, I love these two. They're seen in IKEA.
Yeah.
Who doesn't try and do that and live a fake life in IKEA?
Hey,
people IKEA's who have never been to IKEA. But yeah,
since the last time I watched this movie, I've been to an IKEA. I didn't even know that was a real place when I first watched this movie.
Yeah. Just their monologue, their banter back and forth, so playful.
Chinese family in our bathroom.
Yeah, it's great. I love us.
Yeah,
I love them together. It's just one of my favorite on-screen couples. And I just wanted them to end up together, but I'm also glad that they're not, kind of deal, you know. Also, there's a line. It's a card. And I love this line. Do you remember? Do you know what line I'm talking about in particular?
Every day you make me proud, but today you get a card.
That's great.
That is that's my most quoted line from this movie, and I say it a lot actually. To the point where I have friends that have never seen this movie but know that quote because of it, because mm-hmm. of how much I use it.
Yeah. So. This movie's special. It's relatable. It's validatable, and it'll make you laugh, make you cry, it'll make you cheer. And hey,
it's cool.
Has a great soundtrack.
Is there anything else you want to touch on before I? Because I have one last thing I'll close it out with, and we kind of touched on it, but
do it.
All right. So the movie obviously ends with, you know, him realizing Summer is getting engaged, or she's engaged, she's getting married. There's a great scene, Vagabond by Wolfmother's playing, and he's kind of, you know, he's gonna invest his time into what he actually truly loves, which is architecture. And he's gonna start sketching again, and he's drawing on his wall, and Autumn's getting married. You know, it's the same, it's kind of a parallel of what's going on in their lives. He's bettering himself, she's getting married, she's growing, and you know, then they meet at their favorite spot, or his favorite spot, and you know, they kind of come to terms with everything, and he's finally able to, in a sense, forgive her. You know, he says, I guess congratulations are in order. She says, only if you mean it. And he says, oh well, then. And he doesn't say congratulations, because she hurt him at the end of the day. She hurt him, and she knows it, and that's why she's there, to kind of explain herself to him and everything. And by the end, after she explains herself, you know, he does say, I really do hope you're happy. He's grown now. He's come to forgive her and everything like that. But that then leads into the final scene, which some may think is corny. And, you know, again, it's a romantic comedy, like Gus said earlier, even though I disagree. It's just a romance movie. It is a romantic comedy, but whatever. You get to this part at the end, where he is going into another job interview, and another woman is there, and she asks him if he's interviewing, and they kind of have this chemistry right away. And he realizes as he's getting up, and it says, you know, coincidence. Coincidence is all anything is. There's no fate. There's no such thing as fate anymore. It's just coincidence. That's what Summer had taught him, even though he had taught Summer that there is fate. Like, that was their whole conversation, that there is fate. Fate is a thing. And he was basically having the opposite view. They had switched views. He was like, no, it's just coincidence. But then he decided to take a chance and go back and ask her. And he asks her on a date. And he introduces himself and he says, you know, my name's Tom. She says, I'm Autumn. And he looks at the camera and he kind of smiles. That's awesome in two ways. A, you know, the play on just Summer to Autumn. But also, think about when you think of autumn as the season, you think change. That's the very first thing. And that's what this movie is completely about, entirely, is change. And that's almost him literally, it's the changing of one man, but also the just the relationship. And it resets to one day at the end, and the leaves fall off and everything. It is literally the antithesis of this movie. It is the end and the beginning all at the same time. And I love that.
Can't think of any better words to move to the factory on than that. Or friends, my balls.
That does it. So in this portion of the show, this is where we take the film we just watched and we submit it to the factory. That's where we take the film and we imagine what it would look like if it came out today. Who would direct it? Who would star? Same film, just different booking for the modern era. However, this week we're going to do a twist. Now, you know, we've been doing this show. We're on our third year. We've been doing this show for so long that, you know, every now and again we need to mix it up, change it up, and do something a little different. So this week we decided to do it as if this movie was made in the 50s, 60s, and or 70s. Just casting older...
40s.
Or 40s.
I never said 70s, you fool.
40s, 50s, 60s. A la WandaVision, episode 1 and 2. but just imagining older actors and older actresses playing these roles just for fun, to kind of mix it up and just give us a little more, like almost like instead of a modern casting, a retro cast for this.
Retro casting indeed.
So with that being said, who you have in mind? Let's do director. Let's do Tom. Let's do Summer. Simple as that. Who you got for your director?
So for my director, I'm going to go with one of my favorite directors of this era from the 40s, 50s, 60s. That's Billy Wilder. Billy Wilder made such films as Double Indemnity, Sunset Boulevard, Sabrina, which is also up there, is one of my favorite romance films. We like this movie. Some Like It Hot.
Yeah.
Great movie. The Apartment. And the list goes on and on and on. Great director. I know later in his career he kind of faltered a bit. I don't even know. He might have had some personal stuff going on too. I'm not too sure on that front. But as far as the films of his that I enjoy, and because we're doing a retro recast, retro factory, you can pick him at the prime. So I'm going with Billy Wilder.
All right. I went with, it's funny because the director I went with is the director of two movies that I had never even seen until the last 3 or 4 years of my life. And he's a very important director. I had seen other films he had done, but never these ones. Director of one of my favorite rom-coms that we watched last year, and that's Frank Capra. Frank Capra directed It's a Wonderful Life, and he directed It Happened One Night. Both are films that I watched recently. We watched It Happened One Night last year. So if you haven't watched It Happened One Night, still highly recommend. It Happened One Night is a movie that came out in 1934 and is still so good and so relatable to this day. And it's a phenomenal romantic comedy. And so I think that Frank Capra he captured those two. I mean, you watched It Happen One Night for the first time last year. He captured this chemistry between Clark Gable and Claudette Colbert, or Corbett, however you want to say it, but I'm pretty sure it's Colbert. There was such good chemistry there. Even Jimmy Stewart and is Donna Reed?
Donna Reed.
And It's a Wonderful Life. I just have to go with Frank Capra because, I mean, he's just done not only those two movies. I'm doing him a disservice by just saying those movies because, I mean, what are some other fantastic movies he's done? I mean, he's one of the most famous.
Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Didn't he do that one? He did that other Jimmy Stewart movie. I worked on the play of it. Shit.
He did Mr. Deeds Goes to Town.
Yes. What? Oh, piss on my face.
Broadway
what?
Bill?
Broadway Bill. That's what they call me. Now, I'm going to find it here, and I'm going to be upset. Because it's probably not even a movie he made.
he was an important director for that time, that era, and everything as well. So yeah,
I can't take it with you. You can't take it with
can't
you.
Take Jimmy it with Stewart. You. Yeah. So I think that Frank Capra is a very, very, very strong pick for director of this film.
That may be true, but let's see what our coin has
see what
to
fate
say
has to say.
Well, you changed my mind about fate. And hey, Frank Capra is not it. No, I'm kidding. It is Frank Capra. You got heads.
It's too good a pick.
It's pretty good.
All right. Well, then next up, we got Tom and Summer. Why don't we just say them?
Why don't you talk in the microphone?
I'm sorry. I was writing. I was writing my summer down because I had them from earlier, but I didn't write them down. Damn it. Who you have for your Tom and your Summer? Why don't you just say them together? They're a pairing. Might as well toss them at there.
Okay, good call. And we had a rule. This is an off microphone rule. You know, if you follow us on the show, if you listen every week, or if you've even listened once, you know we enjoy some James Stewart, Jimmy Stewart, and he gets referenced quite a bit. It's part of, I don't know, our shtick. Rule: you can't cast Jimmy Stewart. It was a tough rule to make. Ben, what did you have to say about that rule?
Bullshit. I just don't understand why you can't cast me in a movie.
If I said like, Tom, we're just friends.
Be like, no, we're not friends. Just come over here, pull up some cushion. Let me pour you some brandy. We'll talk about it first. You know, I know. How about we get some pancakes? How that sound? Or maybe you want the moon? You want the moon? Say the word. I'll tie a big lasso around it.
You quoted something from the movie, that line when Summer's like, but we're just, he's like, don't say it.
Friends, my balls.
The whole thing. Say the whole fucking thing.
This is not how you treat your friends. Kissing in the coffee room. Shower sex. I'll toss you out the rear window. You're lucky you live on the sixth floor. I can't look down and get that vertigo. Even that scene where I'm all upset. Leaving the party at Summer's house, I'm going down the stairs. That was a rough one to film. Even rougher to watch.
That's good. So for me, I picked one. I picked my favorite actress of all time. She's from that era. And the other, I picked an actor who didn't get to do much in his career. So if I can pick him from history and put him in another movie, I will do that. Summer, my Summer, Audrey Hepburn. She's my favorite actress of all time. She's gorgeous, wonderful actress. We're talking Breakfast at Tiffany's and Sabrina and Funny Faces and Roman Holiday, amongst a plethora of others. She had a wonderful career. She's a fashion icon. She's an icon in general. But if I can pick someone from the past to retro recast for Summer, who Summer and Tom are like my favorite on-screen couple, why not put my favorite actress in there? And Zoe Deschanel's always Miss Corky with her music. We got Audrey Hepburn blasting some Moon River for us or something for karaoke. I chose James Dean. James Dean, also an icon, a pop culture icon, a phenomenal actor too. Was taken too soon, horrible accident, claimed his life back in the day. But he was only in three movies. He was in East of Eden, Rebel Without a Cause, and Giant. And two of those three movies he got nominated for an Oscar for. Great actor, especially for the time, a very odd, this odd mannerisms, different for the time, unique for the time. Handsome, odd in a way, in a beautiful way. And my choice to play Tom.
So my choice for Summer, I wanted, you know, there's that scene at the beginning of the movie where it's explaining Summer and this Summer anomaly, right? It's a great scene that's explaining, you know, she is a normal everyday girl, but for whatever reason, you know, she quoted a song in her yearbook, made records spike. She worked at an ice cream parlor. It was their most successful time ever. So I wanted to find
factoid about that scene when she's working in the ice cream parlor. The person in line who gets the ice cream is actually Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Really?
Uh huh.
Ah, well, look at that. Would you look at that? But I wanted to go with an actress that had that same head-turning ability. And an actress that I, again, saw very recently within the past couple of years, who I had never seen in anything before, but watching her in that movie, my head was turning. I'm like, man, she is a gorgeous woman. And that's Kim Novak. Kim Novak. Oh, indeed. And you know I'm going to cast Jimmy Stewart because fuck it. No, he'll just put on a wig. And, you know, yeah, maybe a mole right here and be Mary.
I'm Mary Stewart.
Yeah. Hey, you never said we couldn't cast him as Summer. You're cute. I like you. You're fun.
Tea's ready.
Yeah. shit. I love the Smiths. I nominate young Bertha here. Kim Novak. Kim Novak, she's in Vertigo, and she is, would you agree? I mean, she is head-turning in that film. Throughout everything. You're still laughing about that.
I am, I'm sorry.
Madeline!
Yeah, she is head-turning to the point where you almost can't even watch the movie. You get a little distracted.
And I would say that's one of her biggest, if not her biggest roles, was in Vertigo.
Oh, yeah.
But she is phenomenal in it, and she really plays two parts in that. She's Madeline and she's Judy, her real self, because she's kind of like an actress in the film itself. But she is very head-turning. She is really charismatic in the movie and almost mesmerizing. When she's playing Madeline, she is kind of has that same, like, she catches old Jim in her web. Kind of deal. So I went with Kim Novak as my Summer. And for my Tom, it's an actor that I actually haven't seen in anything. I've seen a billion clips, though, and a lot of people say that this is, for whatever reason, like, one of the most important, like, romantic, not ensembles, that's not the right word, but kind of like, it's a key part in history. It's Humphrey Bogart in Casablanca.
Let me tell you something, kid. I almost picked Humphrey Bogart, too. I just watched The Maltese Falcon recently. You understand?
Oh, he's in... Humphrey Bogart, isn't it? I have seen him in a movie, then, because I watched that in college.
He is oddly sexy.
Hey, was he on Hitler's kill list?
Probably.
I was going to go with Clark Gable, just because how charismatic he was in It Happened One Night. But I wanted to go with someone that I'm not as familiar with. I watched some Casablanca clips, today. I watched the famous, you know, plane one. Plane scene.
Getting on that kid. You're getting on that kid plane. You're getting on that plane.
Last of my horse. I picked John Wayne to play this one.
Hey, you know what? If you look up key actors from the 1940s and 50s, that John Wayne.
John Wayne wasn't in many romance movies. He was too busy shooting people.
Too busy shooting and
playing Genghis Khan.
And eating steak.
And using the bathroom. That's a Family Guy joke. Bill Doyle. Yeah, that's right. And I just made a Big Bill coil.
Yuck.
I went with Humphrey Bogart. I mean, obviously, again, what's fun about this take or this way of doing like a retrocast is, you know, these are groups of people that never worked together and people that we've really never worked with. And maybe some that a lot of you listening aren't as familiar with. And maybe it'll prompt you to check some of these other films out that we're talking about. But yeah, Humphrey Bogart and Kim Novak.
You're Tom and my Summer. Humphrey Bogart and Audrey Hepburn, they're in Sabrina together. And that's a great movie. You should check it out.
I've never seen an Audrey Hepburn movie.
I was like, we did Breakfast at Tiffany's, but we have not done that.
No, I've never seen an Audrey Hepburn movie.
I
almost went with, originally my pick for Summer was actually, I put it out of my mind now. She was super famous. Again, taken before her time. Wizard of Oz.
Judy Garland.
Judy Garland, yeah.
Oh, shit. That's good shit.
Yeah. I almost went with Judy Garland.
I didn't even think of that. That's actually a great pick. So many opportunities and choices. And that's why I do like a retro recast. Maybe we will incorporate them in the future. But let's see for our 500 Days of Summer, who's going to be Tom and Summer. Ben's pick, my pick, and the coin says me.
Tails. All right.
It is. James Dean, Audrey Hepburn.
So then our 500 Days of Summer, 50s, 40s, 50s remake?
It's probably 50s. Yeah.
Would be a very old directing Frank Capra. Tom, played by James Dean, and Summer, played by Audrey Hepburn. Indeed. So, with that being said, before we close out the show, anything more you want to talk about, discuss, add on?
Hey, if you had 500 days of something, what would you pick that is guaranteed success? Wouldn't fall apart? Anything.
Ooh. Like 500 days of just like doing something that would be like really, really successful? Yeah.
Or whatever.
So I could say, like, playing the lottery.
If you played 500 days of the lottery, you would have out of money.
And you said I could not fall apart. You said success.
Well, that is not.
I won, damn it.
I would say
I won 500 days in a row.
That's not what I mean. I meant like 500 days, like for me, like 500 days of anime. So you can watch anime for 500 days. It's not gonna betray you. You play lottery 500 days, you're gonna lose all your money. That's gonna take you 500 days to beat Persona 5.
Nah, it took me a month last time I played it. Just 1 month.
Normal person take 500 days.
I mean, the first time I played it when I was normal, it took me like 5 months, 6 months. So
if you played that game for 500 days, which is roughly a year and a half. Every day. Would you get sick of it?
Maybe. I don't know. I'm really excited for this new one that's coming out soon. I mean, 500 days of like doing something every day would probably just be what I do every day now, which is play video games.
I'm pretty sure you're on like 5,000 days of that.
Yeah. I mean, that's like my go-to and play a game a day. I mean, I'm even having trouble though. Like I my whole thing was this week. I was gonna watch shows. I wasn't gonna play any games. But even like past couple nights, I'm like, shit, I'm bored. I need something to play. And I'm like trying to find something that doesn't require to get into the story. And it's hard. I'm very bored. almost to the point where I can pre-order this new Persona game digitally, the digital edition, and if you pre-order the digital deluxe, it comes out tomorrow versus next Tuesday. I'm like, shit, I should do that. But I already pre-ordered it physical.
I told you, get Star Wars Pod Racer. Race a bit. You have a blast.
Well, good. But indeed, that is the show, everyone. We hope you enjoyed it. A little longer of an episode this week. I guess I went on... we both went on some long tangents there. This movie is obviously... I think if you couldn't tell, there is a lot of passion and personal feelings tied to this movie between the both of us. And that's not to say that all the movies we've done prior to this haven't had that. I feel like the only other time I've ever gotten this like pumped up or talked about was with Star Wars, when we've done the Star Wars movies.
Top 10 movie for you?
You know, it probably... it's not one that I watch every year, and that's because of how important I view it.
So I do that with a lot of my favorite top 10 movies. I can't watch every year because I got to keep the potency.
Yeah, like Star Wars, Jaws, Jaws I watch every year. Jurassic Park I watch every year. Star Wars I watch every year. All three of those favorites, top 10 easily, top 5 easily. But like Rocky, my favorite movie of all time, I haven't watched in probably 2 years because I just haven't had the need to watch it, and I just know that it is, when I watch it again, I'm going to enjoy it.
Well, maybe now that you revisited 500 Days of Summer, maybe after some contemplating, maybe it will enter your top 10.
Yeah. Maybe. I mean, that's a hard one. I wish I would do that. I should start doing that with movies like I do with my video games, where I just write down a summary, but holy shit,
write an article.
That would take forever. Yeah.
Do that about after every movie you watch. Like, I watch this movie, it ranks 300 on my list.
Yeah, that'd be a little harder. I mean, hell though, I mean, I've been doing this video game list, like, actively for 3 years, and I'm at 51 games, and I played 20 of those 51 games last year. So, that pace keeps up. We're going to be at 100 games, and I'll be like, I wrote this down, but I don't even remember this game.
Yeah, right.
But that is the show, everyone. We hope you enjoyed it. If you liked what you heard, be sure to check us out over on Audioboom. That is where we'll be posting to first. It's our primary source, and then subsequently it gets shipped out everywhere else. So Google Play, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts, we're there. You can also find us over on Twitter. We are at the Bros Movie Pod. That's where we'll be posting links to the show, what we're going to be watching, memes Goss makes, things of that nature. And at, you can also find us over on Facebook.
Hey, you go to Facebook and type in the Brothers Movie Factory. Guaranteed we will be there certainly more than 500 days. Like us, share, follow along, as I like to post memes of what we're watching each and every week. And I attach links to the things Ben mentioned a moment ago, like Audioboom, Spotify, Twitter, and at.
So that is the show. We hope you enjoyed it. But until next week, brothers.
Brothers.
Brothers. Brothers, my balls.